We are the champions, my friend. We couldn't beat Tottenham once again. We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for Jurgen, because we are the champions of the world.
That's a great start, Tom. Thank you so much for that. You invite me onto this podcast and then you belittle my football team. You belittle a team I've supported for approximately 75 years. And that's it. Now you expect me to sit here for the next three podcasts with you and do that? I've lasted 3 seconds, but I'm out.
That's the voice of the only Millwall fan we'd allow on this podcast. Mainly because we haven't got the budget for the better ones. Matt Lawrence is with me, Tom Rennie, today on the Week in the Tackle podcast. No Dunny for the next 3 weeks before we go on our summer hiatus, but he will be back with us for a brand new run of the show as we enter the new European season slash I've been on holiday and had a baby in that. What do you want from me? Blood! So we will be back with Dunny later in the year. But Matt Lawrence is here. Matt, what's going on, man? You didn't enjoy the song at the start. The song at the start is very much a cornerstone of this soon-to-be award-winning podcast.
Well, I would have preferred Cornerstone by the Arctic Monkeys. Pretty good link there for me, I feel. Certainly the We Are the Champions note. Yes, Liverpool blew it again against Tottenham. And to be honest, even though I'm a Liverpool fan, I wasn't particularly impressed with Jurgen Klopp post-match when he's been moaning about the way that Tottenham are playing. And it's almost, I don't think he quite used the words anti-football, but that's paraphrasing and that's what he did say. But it's ridiculous. There's no way. He kept saying that Tottenham have got world-class players. And yes, they have, maybe two or three. Liverpool have got five or six or seven. It was impossible for Tottenham to play against Liverpool in the Liverpool way because they're not as good at it. So the same way that Burnley play or that Stoke used to play, Tottenham are following a similar model. And it's you do anything you can in your powers to stifle the opposition, and Tottenham did a very good job of it. I don't understand even what Klopp was saying. You expect people to play in a really open and expansive way so that you can beat them. It's ludicrous for me. And that's a Liverpool fan speaking.
They didn't let us beat them. What's going on here? What's happened to football? We came here, we were supposed to win and we didn't. The opposition were incredibly selfish, was basically what he's saying. But Matt, you've gone into hard-hitting analysis here, like you're covering on Counter-Attack or something. And this is not that programme. What people really want to know, because we do release videos of this programme, is what's going on with that stupid f***ing hat?
Yes. Well, the stupid hat is because I haven't had a chance to shower, so the hat is on to protect my modesty. You can't see below the waistline, luckily, so my modesty is protected even more. That is all that's going on. I just haven't showered. I smell, and my hair's unkempt.
I wouldn't have that problem. No, I wouldn't know this. When I used to have hair, in a time long before now, a time before cable TV, and a time before the internet. And I remember going to Wetherspoons pubs. Do you remember Wetherspoons pubs back from your days living in England before you left us, you traitor? And the smoke in there, because smoking used to be illegal when I first started being allowed to go to pubs. And you didn't realise how bad it was got until you got in the shower the next morning and you tried to wash your hair and you were like, oh my God, my hair just stinks like an ashtray. Is that what's happened to you? You've been in a Wetherspoons.
I haven't been in a Wetherspoons because I wouldn't set foot in a Wetherspoons. But yes, I do remember washing my hair, though, when it was full of cigarettes and ash. But that's because my friends would use my hair as an ashtray and things like that. But yeah, it used to stink. When I was 16, 17, going, oh, that's illegal to drink alcohol, but apparently you used to be able to do it. Yeah, I would always return home, clothes, hair stinking of cigarettes. And my mum and dad would assume I had been smoking, even though I hadn't. But my lungs will probably tell you in a couple of years that I had smoking vociferously, even though technically I hadn't.
See, we had to start with something informal. Now we can get to the formal stuff. And I wonder if the title race is something Liverpool can wash out of their hair. Let's talk about the title race, because we have been billing it big time, and quite rightly, for the last few weeks, as Liverpool have surged and closed the gap on Manchester City in the Premier League. But I don't know. I kind of feel a bit flat about it today. A bit disappointed with where we are because, you know, I am a Premier League journalist and I pay my mortgage from covering the Premier League and talking about the Premier League and selling the Premier League as well to our kind of partners around the world for my main job. So, you know, I'm not gonna go totally anti-Premier League, but when you hear journalists from the Bundesliga and Serie A, who we speak to on our SiriusXM FC show a lot, and, you know, for 10 years, what, Juventus won it, and 10 years, Bayern have won it, and 10 years, PSG have won Liga, bar one aberration with Lille. And you say, like, oh, you kind of want a title race, don't you? And generationally now, we're in a position where, because of the sovereign wealth funds and the oligarchs and the public investment funds and the Champions League money that sloshes around these clubs that were lucky enough to be in it when the financial expansion started and, you know, are on third base right now when others are still on, I don't know, sticky first, or is it home plate, or is that when you go around? I don't know. You get what I'm saying. And we're in a situation, Tim's face there when I tried to do American sport there, quite rightly, was disgusted by me. But, like, Man City winning the league again, which I think they have now, it kind of bums me out. It bums me out, but not because we're all Liverpool fans, like Guardiola thinks. I couldn't give a toss about Liverpool. And now I know you're a Liverpool fan. I want them to lose even more. But, you know, I just want different teams to be able to win it. And they start so far ahead. And we come into the studio now with the news that, and I don't like transfer news in general until you get a PDF saying it's done, as regular listeners will know. But we come into the news that pretty much Erling Haaland is going to Man City. So they're going to win the league. They're going to get over 90 points again. They would have lost, what, three games all season. And now they're about to sign the most exciting young striker in European football for a ludicrous amount of money, which is only afforded because they're owned by a sovereign wealth fund. And again, I don't care on a fundamental level who wins the league, really. I have a team, I want them to win. If my team do not win, everything else is inconsequential to me. The only thing that will make me happy is West Ham winning something. If anyone mentions f***ing Frankfurt in this programme, I'm walking out. That was the only one. Family show. But sorry, Tim, wrong show. But I just want to say that, I you know, it's nothing against Man City, but I don't want them to win the league. I want a different winner every year and at least five or six teams who can win it and team building to be awarded with trophies, as opposed to, you know, Guardiola has done it with the biggest, richest team in the country three times. And it's great. And he's a genius. He's the best coach of his generation. But this has got to stop, and we've got to stop Man City. We as a collective need to stop Man City, because generationally, Matt, you're a little bit older than me, a lot, and you would have been at a time where, I've been a fan at a time when you chose Liverpool because they were winning so much because you were a filthy f***ing glory hunter. That's three. Sorry, Tim, that's my limit. But I know, it's been a long day. But at least there was some peril in it, and there was multiple teams who could win it. It's all becoming a bit Bundesliga, isn't it? And I don't want to have to be selling the Premier League around the world in the same way the German journalists do by saying, oh, but there's so many other stories. Look at the fan culture. Who's good? Brighton. Look at the fan culture at Brighton. That's the real story here. It's not, is it? We want a title race.
The fan culture at Brighton, that's the best you could come up with. You do know that every single Brighton fan is a fan of Arsenal or Chelsea or another team. Everybody who lives in that Sussex area, barring the people who actually live in Brighton, they have all moved out of London and they all support Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham, multiple other teams. And they go and take their kids to the Amex because it's a nice family environment. There is no culture at Brighton.
I feel like you've taken the wrong point here. That was just the first club I could think of. Like, okay, Everton, the exact same point, but Everton, or the exact same point on Newcastle, or the exact same point on West Ham, that you want these clubs. I just didn't want to say West Ham. It's always my example. But you know what I mean? Like, it's about, how do we stop Man City is really my question to you, because they've got to be stopped, haven't they?
Well, how do we stop Man City? You just said it. The Everton fan culture I will take. But then you mentioned Newcastle being owned by a club that is run by the Saudi Arabian government. Now you're really bringing things to the table. You cannot possibly say that Newcastle. Oh, dear, Tom.
Fan culture. There's still a fan culture. Okay. F***ing hell, Matt. That's four. F***ing hell. That's five. I mean, you're in a situation, just like, I want to know about how you'd stop Man City, not how much you are a big fan of Brighton.
But I'm with you, how do you stop Man City? But you've just said it, Newcastle can stop Man City because they're owned by the Saudi Arabian government, basically. So they can stop Man City because they'll throw even more money. Yes, of course it is. Liverpool can possibly do it, but they need to keep all their side and strengthen the game. But you've already mentioned Haaland's going to be going to Man City. He's guaranteed to score 20 to 25, if not 30 goals in the Premier League. They'll be absolutely unstoppable. They didn't need Jack Grealish and they bought him for 100 million just to have another guy that they could bring off the bench. They're very much unstoppable. I'm with you, though. What will it be? 4 out of 5 titles in the last 5 years Man City will have won? Yes, I'm a Liverpool fan. Yes, I wanted Liverpool to win it. They've been on a massive run in the last, 3 months, 4 months? But it's very hard to beat Man City when they win 27 games, or they've won 27 games already. And it's very hard when teams roll over for them as well. Teams do roll over. Like Newcastle this weekend absolutely rolled over and died. They were embarrassing. Like, but yeah, how do we stop Man City? Throw more money at it, as Newcastle will. But it's going to be very, very hard, isn't it? Look, Man United have thrown money at it and they haven't achieved it because they've had a bunch of bad managers. Man City have got the money, got a very good manager who not only is a very good coach, but also builds that culture within the dressing room as well. And if you listen to Grealish or Rodri being interviewed after the game against Newcastle, they all seem in it together. They genuinely seem like relatively decent people as well. And they are mentally tough. Coming off the back of that ridiculous loss to Real Madrid, they somehow succeeded to turn up and give a very good performance. Granted, Newcastle were rubbish, but they gave a great performance and won 5-0.
I'm not a disaster capitalist like most people in the countries that we live in. Certainly not the despicable Tory government, who are just the worst humans ever to have lived. But I'm also not a communist who believes in extreme regulation, right? And a communist by, you know, the written form, not any sort of communism that's ever come into force in any country in the world. What we need here, I think, is regulation. We need the central bodies of these leagues, the Scottish League, the German League, the Italian League, and soon the Premier League. What we need is them to say, well, look, we let the disaster capitalists in, we let the venture capitalists and the oligarchs and the sovereign wealth funds in, and we think we made a mistake. There should have been better regulation. We're always talking about fit and proper tests and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
What we need to do is hamper the title winners and hamper the teams that can spend, you know, daddy's wealth because daddy was lucky enough to be born in a country that's oil rich and you're in the royal family and not a serf, right? That's basically where we are now. We're in the end game of all Western society now, which is where we are. And what we need is proper regulation. So I would say you win the league. I don't want to go all American on you here. I wouldn't say draft system, but you win the league and there is a limit on how much you can spend, or there is no transfers the next year, or there is no signings next year. You've won the league, the same team has to defend. Or even I'd go crazier. Man City play without a goalkeeper. They have to play with 10 every week. If the value of their team, the value of their team has to be the same as the value of the team who comes up from the Championship the following season. I don't know. Something must be done. Otherwise, you get these things where, I mean, was it ever thus? Right, I suppose that's my question here to you. Was it ever thus that those with the most money were always the champions? And if it was ever thus, it didn't last forever because the wealth wasn't so gross that they could sportswash their money through football in the way they do now. Is there any way there's going to be a... I mean, mine aren't particularly sensible, many of them. Is there a way to sensibly regulate for not equality? I'm not saying equality. I'm not saying that silly Formula One version where they'll win electric cars and they've all got the same car. I'm not saying that. But is there a way to stop the ones at the top from running so far away from the bottom that next year we might have, and I hope we do, Man City against Luton, who are in the playoffs. Luton's first team costs 1.5 million. That gets you one Jack Grealish toe.
Is there any way of doing it? Well, UEFA tried, didn't they, with financial fair play, and that was an absolute waste of time. So all that Manchester City did was Etihad sponsored the stadium, so they're paying themselves. So they said that the sponsorship for the stadium costs 2 billion. And by the way, there's 10 corporate season tickets that cost £1 million each, and Etihad bought those in as well. They made sure that they made enough profit to be able to cover the wages, and I'm not sure that it still did. So is there a way of protecting that? It's going to be very difficult, and you need to, well, you need to adhere by those rules, but they haven't. Financial fair play went completely out the window. It's an absolute nonsensical. It was a waste of time. I'm with you. Yes, most of the things, all of your ideas, like remove a goalkeeper, it would be fun to watch, but it's not sensible. You spoke about Jack Grealish maybe having one toe. That could happen. But apart from that, no, I'm not sure that there is a specific way of hampering the oppositions.
Okay, well, we'll try that. We'll give it a whirl. I'll put my pitch in and see if we can make that happen. That may have been cut, but it was very funny. Final question on this, because I don't want to waste a lot of our time. You know, everyone's heard of, is the title race over. We'll find out next week. But the final question to you, as a Liverpool fan in the media who's not from the city, you chose them because they were good. Is Guardiola right that everyone's a Liverpool fan and no one's a Man City fan? And there's a bias against Manchester City in our media elites, of which you are the elitist of the elite.
Is there? I always thought that the bias was towards London clubs because that's where the majority of the media used to be. I know the BBC is now up in Salford, which is up near Manchester. I would say that there's certainly more of a bias towards Liverpool than Manchester City, because Man City don't have that heritage and the culture, I guess, that Liverpool had. And as you say, yes, for whatever reason, I chose Liverpool. Yes, they won lots of trophies and they were really good when I was growing up. So did lots of other people who were my age or slightly younger or slightly older as well. So, and I think that Liverpool fans are similar to Man United fans. The joke is always that most Man United fans live below the Watford gap. So there's that could well be a reason. But yeah, Man City is a small club, Tom. We know that, you know that. Man City is a tiny football club. Even when they get to Wembley, they can't fill up half of the stadium there. You look at the Etihad throughout most of the season, it's not full. It's a small club. It doesn't have many fans, but I don't think there's a massive anti-Manchester City bias. It's just, it's a much smaller club than Liverpool.
You won't know, listeners, that during Matt's excellent point there, I had a small crisis that my battery on my laptop was about to run out. So it wasn't that I wasn't listening. It was more that there was an existential crisis going on inside my front room. The cleaner's taken the power cord away, and she, God bless her, Fran. Lovely woman, does a great job on the bathroom, but she did the front room today and she took out my power cable, maybe to plug in the Henry Hoover. There's no way of knowing. On to something else. Let's talk about the Champions League race. Arsenal against Tottenham. Arsenal victorious again this weekend. I got a lot of time for Mikko Arteta. I think he's done a brilliant thing at Arsenal in terms of, you know, what Man United need to do right now. Used to hear the Arsenal faces, so many of them in the media, used to hear the Arsenal faces saying like, well, this is Arsenal Football Club. This is not good enough for Arsenal Football Club. We're Arsenal Football Club. We deserve better than this. We're Arsenal Football Club. And Mikko Arteta came in and was like, what? I don't mean anything, guys. What we need to do is get young, hungry players believing in me, believing in a system, harnessing the power of the history, sure, but not letting it weigh us down, not having some bloke on 400 grand a week and someone else on 50 grand a week or whatever. Not the 50 grand a week, something to spit on, but you know what I mean, the way wages are these days. And Arteta has built a team. Very lucky not to be in the Champions League this season or any European football. I get that, I grant you. But he has built a team of 13 or 14 players, not too dissimilar to what like the likes of West Ham have done in recent times. Built a team, got the job done, a lot of time for him. And it's something Man United, I think, will need to do, which we'll get to a little bit later in the programme. But they take on Tottenham on Thursday. And I wanted to ask you about Tottenham, because they played your team, Liverpool, on Saturday. And they went there in a very Dunsethery kind of way. They went there to bring the skullduggery to the fore, to defend with their lives, 11 behind the ball at points. Harry Kane was playing centre-half, and yet he was the furthest forward player. And they tried to nick it in the same way they did against Manchester City. Jurgen Klopp thought that was despicable, and he hated teams playing like that because they have world-class players. And I wonder what your view was on Tottenham, the way they went about it, not only in terms of the aesthetic of it, which was what Jurgen Klopp was bitching about, but also the fact that I think they had to win that game and they seemed to go to draw it.
I don't think that they had any other way of playing against Liverpool other than what they did. I think they wanted to nick a goal on the counter, as they did through Son in the 56th minute. And I think they then intended to hold on. It's very difficult to do that against Liverpool, even when Liverpool aren't playing that well, as they didn't. I don't care about the aesthetics of any football match at all, because I'm not a football fan per se. I'm a football player. And I knew that when I was in a a worse team, if I'm playing for Millwall or Palace against Liverpool or Man United in the FA Cup, you can't try and play them at their own game. It's impossible. Your players aren't as technically good as the opposition. It's the same as when Arsenal used to go and play against Barcelona under Arsene Wenger, and they used to go to Camp Nou and try and out Barcelona at Barcelona in their centre, and they lost nearly every game. It's impossible. I know that the odd game they did win, but you have to find ways of winning games of football. You're not a football fan. When you put on the shirt and you're running around there or you're on the touchline as a coach, all that matters is how to win the game. And Sean Dyche made a very good Burnley side play anti-football, if you will, but they were successful and they stayed in the Premier League for 9 or 10 years. If Sean Dyche set up Chris Wood and Tarkowski and Jack Cork to try and play out the back via Nick Pope, who's got two left feet, it would be absolutely impossible. So you choose a manner of play that's going to make life very difficult for the opposition. So was it aesthetically pleasing? No, of course it wasn't. But I thought Tottenham played very well in terms of their game plan, in terms of their strategy and what they did. The only thing that they screwed up was being unlucky that they had that Diaz goal that I think took a massive ricochet off Bentancur. That was the only goal that Liverpool got. And it was fortuitous. It was lucky. So Tottenham, yes, they needed to win the game, but they nearly did, Tom.
That Højbjerg header. Oh, my God. Why didn't he just put it in?
Well, exactly. They had opportunities to win the game. And I, as I say, I'm a Liverpool fan. You mentioned I hated Klopp's sour grapes at the end of the game. And I know you were being a little bit sarcastic, but also not. He expects teams to go and roll over and die for him and let me win. Let's make a really good spectacle of it. But as long as we win 4-2, that'll be great. You know, that's what Klopp was basically saying. And I don't agree with that. I'm, you know, a former footballer and I would do anything in my power to win a game. I wouldn't need to make it look nice and neat.
Let me put something to you about Tottenham, because I think it's quite interesting this, because I think they tried to draw the game, certainly not lose the game. And I think Antonio Conte is not actually as be all and end all in terms of Champions League qualifications. And I think that we get drawn into thinking that he is. I think Antonio Conte doesn't care about the Europa League, and he certainly won't care about the Conference League should they fall into it. I'm not sure they can now. But I actually think the Champions League, Antonio Conte is never going to be at Tottenham beyond next season. He may well not last the summer, but I think that he is someone who is about winning the domestic league. That is his whole bag. Antonio Conte's whole thing is winning the domestic league. So is it mad to suggest, and feel free to say this is mad, Tom, what are you talking about? Have a sit down and take your pills. But I wonder if Antonio Conte might be thinking, well, if I'm going to stay here, I've got seven players, to my reckoning, seven players who I think are brilliant. And that's the defence, that's the keeper, that's the three strikers. And I think you buy a couple of midfielders, at least one box-to-box, you know, Declan Rice type. I'm not saying Declan Rice, but a Declan Rice type, box-to-box. And you buy better wing-backs, who are the most crucial element of an Antonio Conte side. You went to Brighton, you bought Tarik Lamptey, Cucurella and Yves Bissouma, for example. We know Brighton are a selling club, that's what they do. No fan culture, as you say. But good players. Good buying players culture. If you were to do that, and forget the Cups, forget Europe, and have Antonio Conte in charge with what's already there, I think Tottenham could challenge for the Premier League title. I think they could have a 38 game. They'd need luck and all that. But I think Antonio Conte might be calculating here that Champions League money doesn't matter to me. I'm not interested in building this club over the long term. I'm not interested in the investment it will bring. We've got the Premier League money coming in. Daniel Levy's already promised me £300 million and X players. If they do that and add to what they've got, and they've got Conte, who is brilliant, as he showed at City and showed against Liverpool and shown from where they were to where they are, I wonder whether he was not that bothered about a point at Liverpool because it looks good on his CV. Great blueprint for him to go and do it in the future. And it leads them to a competition in the Europa League. They'll make no money into, they won't care about it. And he can focus solely on trying to win the title. Tell me how mad that is.
Absolutely, completely mad. It's ridiculous. There's no way in the world that Tottenham can win the Premier League, even with buying three players. Have you seen their bench for the weekend? Do you even know these people? Craig, Scarlett, White. It's like I'm playing Cluedo or something. What on earth is that? That's ridiculous. Gallini, Bergwijn, Winks, Rodon, absolutely ludicrous. No, they'd need to buy about seven or eight players. I take your point of They've got a decent defence. The goal is okay. They've got three very good centre forwards. They'd need a hell of a lot of luck because it would need to be the same 11 players playing full 38 minutes. And yes, then they had potential to stifle, to upset teams. I'm with you that Conte did not care at all about what happened at the weekend as long as they upset Liverpool in whatever manner. He didn't want to lose that game, that is for certain. If they'd have nicked it 1-0 or 2-1, then it would have been brilliant. But I also think he thinks that he has that ability to do that against Tottenham as well on Thursday. I think that he thinks there's every chance that they can upset Arsenal. What's the points difference now? I know it's 4-point gap between Tottenham and Arsenal, but we all know that Arsenal got a tendency, even, you know, they've got a tendency to screw up against anybody. You saw them playing against a 10-man, really bad Leeds side, and they still managed to concede a goal off a set piece when there's five Arsenal players all ball watching and some bloke just walks around the back post and volleys in at the back stick. It was embarrassing. Go back and watch that video. There's five players all facing the ball. None of them have opened their bodies out from a basic set piece against a 10-man rubbish Leeds side who've nearly conceded as many goals as Norwich, which is inconceivable to me. And they conceded a goal and they made it very difficult for themselves. So I think Conte is also reliant on the fact of that weak Arsenal underbelly, which may happen. And I think Conte believes he can get 3 points as well against Arsenal.
I think you're going to be surprised. I don't think it's mad at all. I actually think I'm a genius because I've spotted it. Because the thing is, Antonio Conte, he doesn't know this, but we have a symbiosis of knowledge because we're both balds. He might not admit it to himself anymore because of the wig. But us balds, we have a kind of connection that you, the haired, could never quite understand. And I think I've read his mind in press conferences. I think I've read his mind with his tactics this weekend. And I don't think it is mad. I understand you've not heard of the bench. You've not done your research. We don't pay enough for you to do that. I understand that. But
Talk me through the career then of Scarlett on the bench for Tottenham without Googling
Scarlett, he was an agent of Spectrum. And he went to Mars with Captain Black. And what happened is the Mysterons took over both he and Captain Black. Captain Black continued to be an agent of the Mysterons in his new body, but Scarlett somehow managed to shake off the control of the Mysterons, return to Spectrum, get this, as an indestructible agent of Spectrum. And he very much saved the Earth many, many times from the Mysterons. Is this too much of a niche reference? Does anyone remember Gerry Anderson's seismically brilliant Super Mario Nation program, Captain Scarlett and the Mysterons in the 1960s, remade by Jerry in the 90s, early noughties, as a CGI classic, but it didn't quite work because it was a bit too adult and they played it on some stupid kids program that Ant and Dec were hosting at the time. And so it didn't quite work. And in the finale of it, the CGI one that Jerry made before his death, they played the finale in the wrong order. So they played the second bit of the finale and they came back and played the first bit of the finale like it was a prequel. It wasn't a prequel. You just ballsed it up. And now he plays for Tottenham. There you go.
I have absolutely no idea how this podcast hasn't gone worldwide. It's so with so many multinational references like that, it's not at all niche, is it? I have no idea what you just said, apart from the fact that Scarlett is indestructible and he probably should have started for Spurs at the weekend.
For those that haven't seen the work of Gerry Anderson, by the way. Gerry Anderson was a genius. So Super Mario Nation is what he coined it. It's all puppetry. And his programs, Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlett, Stingray, Joe 90, and they're all puppets. Thunderbirds, everybody, come on, Thunderbirds. Incredible worldwide global super mega hit, which has been redone and re-released several times. But Captain Scarlett, I think, was probably the best of the shows, but the puppets were too human. They were too human. It put people off. And it had a great intro. And it goes like, "This is the voice of the Mysterons. We know you can hear us, Earthmen." And he does, and they tell them what they're going to do every week, which is weird because then it gets foiled. Just do the thing. Anyway, we're off topic. I think Tottenham can win the league. That's the crucial point. I want to talk about Manchester United for a little while. Now, don't at us, folks. I know. You get all annoyed when someone else talks about this is Manchester United Football Club. But earlier on, I mentioned Arsenal and what Arteta has done there and taken away that arrogance, I think, about Arsenal, which so many of their former players in the media, they ruin it sometimes by saying it. This is Arsenal Football Club. But Arteta has taken that away from them and made a real sort of working team. I think you could like Arsenal now. To a point, of course, you know, but I think you could really like that team and what he's done. Arteta himself is a bit dislikable with his touchline antics and all that sort of stuff, but I think he's done a tremendous job. Erik ten Hag needs to follow that blueprint. How many times have you got to hear it? This is Manchester United Football Club. This is Manchester United Football Club. And that arrogance from the former players on TV that are on all the time, you know, if anything, all the media are Manchester United fans than Liverpool fans or anybody else, but I digress. It's that arrogance the new manager needs to get rid of and make them a proper functioning football team over 38 Premier League games and forget the rest of it, which is what Arteta has done. Because right now, I think they're so weighed down by Alex Ferguson and so weighed down by being the biggest team of the 90s and so weighed down by their incredible commercial arm that whatever he does now, Erik ten Hag coming in to replace Ralph Rangnick, who, by the way, probably should have resigned on Saturday. Just, sorry, mate, don't take the consultancy money. You've not earned it, mate. I'm sorry to all the sneaky Bundesliga people who told us he was great. He is, and I say this with all due respect, f***ing useless. Like, probably the worst six, I know. Probably, sorry, Tim, probably one of the worst managerial appointments any team in the Premier League has made for 25 years. A complete non-entity, a complete waste of time, a terrible appointment. May as well start with Michael Carrick. I'm sure he's tremendous at certain things. I'm sure he was good elsewhere, but I don't know about that. I am a Prem face, and judging him just on the Premier League, he has been diabolical. Even throwing United under the bus in his pre-Brighton press conference, saying, I tried to buy three strikers, but they said no. To the people that have somehow found a way to pay him money for what he's done, he's still slagging them off in his press conferences, and he's going to become some sort of consultant. It means nothing. He should resign today in shame, but I digress again. The thing is with Man United is I think you saw this weekend against Brighton, who were great, just how much they need to shake off the this is Manchester United Football Club mentality. Just need to shake all that off and become one coherent football team. And Matt, I'd love your view on what on earth Erik ten Hag is going to do, because he ain't going to come in and spend a load of money because they haven't got it. He isn't going to come in and be able to improve a lot of this team. So what on earth is he going to do, and what should be the realistic goals for Erik ten Hag when he comes in?
The way they capitulated against Brighton, the way they just laid down and died, they conceded three goals in 11 minutes, I think, something like that, against Brighton, who hadn't won a game at home in the whole of 2022. This is a side who play neat and attractive football, because that's Graham Potter, what he wants to do, but they find ways to lose games. They're not a particularly good side. They certainly don't score many goals unless they're playing against Manchester United. The ultimate question, I guess, is what ten Hag is going to do, and it will be a really difficult job. Like, for once, we've been a bit serious here. Man United are woeful, and they're still under that umbrella of Alex Ferguson, and Ferguson sits up there in the stands and looks down all the time, and he looks down metaphorically and literally as well. I still think, and to this day, I still believe that Alex Ferguson was happy at Manchester United being poor when he left. I don't think David Moyes was the right appointment. I think that Moyes should have been told the only way he could take that job is to keep a lot of the backroom staff who understood Manchester United and what was going on there and the philosophy. But I do secretly think that, well, not me secretly, because I'm saying it, but I think Ferguson secretly wanted Moyes in there, knowing that he wouldn't be able to do the job. There's no way in the world that David Moyes was going to be able to move Manchester United on. And from there on, it's gone downhill with every managerial appointment. Yes, Carrick would have been better probably than Rangnick. Solskjaer was one of the most ludicrous appointments I've ever known as well. He was a failure at Cardiff. He's only succeeded at Molde. I mean, I'm not even sure what country that is. It's somewhere up near Scandinavia, around there. I don't know. And I'm slightly joking, but not. So what can he do? We know the good thing is that people like Pogba, that Phil Jones, that Matic, Mata, big wage earners are going to be leaving, and their big personalities as well. The first thing I would do would be get rid of Ronaldo. That is for certain. I would get rid of him because he controls everything. Ronaldo's daily on the phone to Sir Alex Ferguson, who I'm sure is on the phone to the Glazers, and that's not going to work. Ten Hag needs to come in and be dominant and be a dictator. I think he needs to come in and be a dictator and be able to control all of his players. And he can't do that if Pogba and Ronaldo are there.
if the last game of the season was at home for Manchester United, they're not playing next week because they played the Chelsea game already. Yeah. So one more game left against Crystal Palace. If it was a home game against, let's just say Norwich, it was a kind of procession sort of game where it was important to leave people with a good feeling at the end of what they'll call a disaster, what 88 other clubs in all football would say was an excellent season. But, you know, again, this is Manchester United Football Club talking about, guys. I actually don't even know what that voice was. It's been a long day. If this was a final game at home against Norwich and everyone's got to go in with a bit of a lift, do you think they would give it Giggsy rest of the season? Not literally Giggsy, but, you know, give it to... This is a kind of another Carrick moment, isn't it? This is a, you know what, that was a nightmare. Let's have one final game and let's have, well, probably Ronaldo, I suppose. Let's let Ronaldo be in charge of the final game, beat Norwich 6-0 and give everyone a final lift. If this was a procession game, final game, do you think they might do that? Because what's the point of doing another game with Ralf Rangnick at this juncture?
Well, I think if the game was at home, that all the players would decide they wanted to run around, as they did, didn't they? The last game at Old Trafford, yeah, they actually did have a run around and Matu and Matic played well. I don't remember who the game was against, but they won it at Brentford and they won it, and they won it relatively comfortably, and they tried. So, no, you wouldn't take it away from Rangnick because you know that the players would all quite fancy it. They didn't fancy going away to Brighton, which is a lovely place to go and play football down there on the South Coast at the Amex. Relatively non-vociferous crowd. It was a simple place to go and play football. And brilliant fan culture, yeah, for Arsenal and Chelsea down there at Brighton. But yeah, if they were playing at home their last game, that last game of the season against Norwich, they'd win 7-0, Ronaldo would score 3, Jesse Lingard may even come off the bench and score 1 or 2, and, you know, it'd all look a little bit rosier. I do worry for Ten Hag. Well, I'm not that worried about him because he'll get paid very well, whether he fails or not. But it's going to be very hard to transform Manchester United into, as you say, the Manchester United that we all expect or that the media expect. Mm. This is a Man United team that have lost 11 games. They've lost as many games as Brighton. They've lost as many games as Crystal Palace. They've only lost 3 fewer than Leicester and Southampton, for goodness sake. It is a poor Man United side right now, from what we believe Manchester United to be from 6-7 years ago. I agree with you, it's a good season for Aston Villa Aston Villa or Palace or Brighton if they finish in 6th, or it may even be 7th. Your West Ham, I think there's a possibility, may still overtake them.
Mm.
But again, getting back to Ten Hag, who knows? Let's see what happens. I think he will have money to spend, but nowhere near enough to make them title contenders. I think the best they can hope for is they improve from whether they finish 6th or 7th, and possibly they get into the Champions League places. But that dressing room's a mess right now. And, you know, as I know from playing for any good side that I had, yes, there was good players on it, but you all got on in the dressing room. Whether you spoke to each other, whether you actually liked each other as human beings, you got on well with each other as footballers, and you went out there because you had a good attitude together and you had a good will to win. That Man United dressing room is shot to pieces.
I mean, there was one thing at the start of that I do just want to go back on. I know you love Brighton. You know, I lived in Brighton for 3 years. I went to university there, and I lived in Falmer, which is just over the M23 from where the stadium is. So there, I mean, I'm not like the kind of person that would have two clubs to support, and certainly not in the same country. I have a fondness for other teams, sure, that West Ham would never play, but I support pretty much one team properly because I was grandfathered in. But I want Rangers to win things, and I want Columbus Crew to win things, and one or two others. I wish them well. You know, but I wouldn't say I was a supporter if I was standing next to a supporter. But I do have a lot of fondness for Brighton, so sod off. But also, they're a great case in point to my other brilliant argument earlier about trying to solve the problems of becoming a Bundesliga, who keep shooting themselves in the foot by not regulating Bayern to within an inch of their life. And no wonder they're so keen on the 50+1 rule being a thing. Yeah, because it's kept you at the top for years and years and years. Of course, you're big fans of it. They've convinced the whole country this is what they want. They've convinced the whole country to be serfs and support the royal family. But anyway, again, lots of digressions today. It's been a long day. But I think Brighton are a good team. I don't. You said you didn't think they were particularly good. I don't agree. I think, you know, if you took the first 3 months of the season and the last 2 months, you know, take away the middle bit. I know it's a bit Arsenal linear champions or whatever, but I think that they're a good team. The trouble is with them, is that they haven't got a goal score, right? So they defend really well. They're a very good coach team. What I love about Brighton is that when they go into big games, and we could do as many jokes as we want, but the budget of Man United makes them a big team, despite how crap they've been. And they just stroke the ball around that they're playing the under nines. They're so confident on the ball, which is given to them by the coaching staff and, of course, their own technical ability, the likes of Trossard and Pascal Gross and McAllister and Bissouma, you know, confident on the ball. Lallana, when he usually comes on, is another great example. Just, he'll look after the football. If Erling Haaland, if we weren't in a time where it's all about the money, if Erling Haaland went to Brighton, Brighton could be a team that challenges for the top four, challenges for the top six, challenges for the top half with regularity, because it's the missing piece of their current model. It would make them better. Instead, we're in a kind of situation where only the sovereign wealth funds and the oligarchs and the public investment funds can afford someone like Haaland. We're in a better world. In Tom Rennie's utopia, where everyone's happy, what would happen is Haaland goes to Brighton and they can then challenge for the title. And we need to find, I don't know what it is, it probably doesn't exist, but we need to find a way to make that attractive. Maybe it is paying wages by a central fund. Maybe it is if you win the league, the team who's just come up. The three teams who come up, here's another one, the three teams, I'm like Sepp Blatter, 500 bad ideas a day. Three teams that come up, right, they get to pick a player each from the champions. It's good, isn't it?
You know what? Although it's completely ludicrous, that would actually solve the problem to a certain extent, but it is completely ludicrous. And I think the player that Bournemouth select out of Man City may have something to say about the five-year contract that he'd signed the year before. So it may be difficult to make him go down to Bournemouth.
City got to keep paying it, though. I'd make City keep paying it for that year, then they can go back.
I still don't think you'd get anybody moving from Man City to go and play for Bournemouth next year.
They have to.
Or the year after that, they'd have to go and play for Norwich. Can you believe that?
They're contractually obliged. This is how we do it. This is it. This off-the-cuff idea. So next year, right, Luton come up and they get Kevin De Bruyne for the year, but he signs a contract at Man City before he goes, so he goes back to Man City the following year. If you're promoted, the three promoted teams, right, they get to take a player from the champions each. De Bruyne goes to Luton and Bournemouth get, who else is good? Bernardo Silva and Fulham, they get to have Ruben Dias because they couldn't defend last time they were up. And they sign new contracts before they go. City pay them for the year. They go back the following year. And then we have a more competitive league. You sanction the champions. You give the new teams a bit of a leg up. And that's how we get competition back, as opposed to what we have now, which is which oil-rich sugar daddy has the most interest this year?
Well, I want to see this happen, Tom, because Ruben Dias is going to be quite happy living on Stevenage Road in Putney, Fulham. That would be perfect. But really, I want this to happen so I can see De Bruyne living on Kenilworth Road and playing at Kenilworth Road as well. He's going to fit right in around there. It's going to be wonderful for him. I want to see him and his family settling in to Kenilworth Road and living in one of the houses around there. I think that should be a stipulation as well. They have to live locally.
And the good news is all of his family could get a job with EasyJet. Very specific geographical joke there, I know, but those that got it would have really enjoyed it. Tim poses a question here. It's like there's flaws in my plan. He says, could Kevin De Bruyne be selected in back-to-back years? So Bournemouth 1 year, Norwich the next year. I would say no. I would put a moratorium on 1 year at a time, but I'm not against it. If they keep winning the league, you keep getting punished. That's the point. It's meant to be harder. When you win the league, it's meant to be harder next. It's not meant to get easier. You're not meant to win the league, but because you didn't win the Champions League, you get to sign Erling Haaland. Erling Haaland for Brighton. He would love it down the lanes.
So basically, we're saying that Erling Haaland's deal is already done at Manchester City. So does that mean Bournemouth can take him for next season then?
I just think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. Let's do it. The moment your contract is signed, you go into the open market of where you could possibly go. I love it. And then if you finish in the Champions League, the teams who finish 17th, 16th and 15th, they get to take a player off you. So Man United would have to sell Ronaldo currently to Burnley.
It's genius. It's going to make the league a better place anyway. I don't think there's going to be many players, good players playing in the Premier League. I think most of them will now be going to La Liga, Serie A. Bayern Munich are definitely going to become a lot better because all the players are going to go and play for them as well. Bayern Munich and PSG may now become the best teams in Europe.
Still going to be on their Man City money, baby. If you paid me a load of money to sign a contract with Man City, but live in Luton, I'd do it.
Have you ever been to Luton? I guarantee you would not. You could pay me all the money in the world and I would not live in Luton. I could be as rich as the owners of the Newcastle United Football Club and I would not live in Luton. With all due respect to Luton.
I used to actually go out with a girl from Luton who worked for EasyJet in the cabin crew. And let's just say she always stored away my tray before landing. What? That was this week's episode of Week in the Tackle, and if you enjoyed it, you should leave us a 5-star rating and a review as well. Something like, Matt Lawrence is way better than Brian Dunseth, you should keep him forever. Something like that. It'll really cheer Danny up. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do leave us a 5-star review as well, and it slags off Brian Dunseth, we might get Tim to read it out at some point in future programmes. Week in the Tackle, also available on the SXM app, free for most subscribers. Download Today and Tap podcasts for video clips of the show and loads more. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SiriusXMFC. Week in the Tackle is part of the SiriusXM podcast network and is produced by Tim Horsey. The executive producer is Pete Corey. Sound design was by Joey DeFazio. Special thanks to SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen, and SiriusXM FC's Program Director, Joe Tollison.
SiriusXM Podcasts.